Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
I just want to forget it ever happened.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 4, Fire Power. Two words. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah DiBunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
We have an Again With This episode dropping this Friday. Why don't you tell the people what it's about?
People, it is about the following. We watched an episode of Guiding Light, not starring, but involving Ian Ziering from July 1987. With all that entails, the copy that we watched is on YouTube. You can watch it too. We'll link it in the show notes.
Sure will.
It includes all the ads. That's probably mostly what we're going to be talking about. But anyway, if you are not a Patreon supporter, you can visit us at patreon.com/againwiththis. And any amount of support gets you access to these extremely exciting and crucial looks back at the careers of key 90210 and MP personnel.
Indeed.
Also, there will be a hot air balloon.
Yes. And we should add, this does not just entitle you to episodes going forward. It also entitles you to the whole archive of past episodes as well, the ones we've already done.
Yes.
And we didn't mention this last week, but this episode of Guiding Light is in fact a Beverly Hills 90210 twofer.
Oh,
what
yeah.
other person from the show also happened to be in this episode, which we did not realize when we started to watch it, and one of us did not realize it until after the end of it and had to be told? Find that out on our Patreon this Friday. For now, let us get into Firepower, shall we?
Yes.
All right, let's start with our D plot. Some poor Russian lady has red hot pants for Matt. So Matt is in his office when a Russian lady comes to the door, not sure if he's the right person to answer a question she has. If you recognize her, it's, hey, it's that Russian lady, Beata Pozniak. She was Marina Oswald in JFK. She was also Masha the maid, who had a crush on Paul and Mad About You. Anyway, Matt is the person she needs to talk to about this. We learn she's Dr. Petrova. She needs to stop one of her patients getting transferred to a facility for incapacitated people, it sounds like. Did you have something to add?
Now that we've been dry. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Russian lady.
This is quite the lane of knock, knock jokes that you defined for yourself, Dave.
They're everywhere.
Cornering the market on Soviet era knock, knock jokes.
You're red squaring the market. So when we see them next, Matt is telling Dr. P he got her patient into the facility she wanted. She wants to thank him by cooking him a gourmet dinner, and he cheerfully accepts until she's like, it's a date, and kisses him on the cheek, and he's like, gulp, and that's it, right?
I mean, there is an audible gulp.
It's cute.
Yeah.
All right. There will be more to the storyline in future episodes. That's where we leave it for this one. Moving on to our C plot. Michael doesn't want Jane, but doesn't want Sam to have her either. At lunch with Joe, Jane is distracted and apologizes. Joe calls it PMS, post-marriage syndrome. She says she worried for weeks when she left her husband that she had made a huge mistake. Jane is over being worried and past being depressed. Now she's mad. Michael's life is together and Jane has to start all over. Joe thinks she needs a date, but the last date Jane had ended in divorce, and they discuss that in clip two.
Nothing serious, just, you know, a night out with someone who cares about you and makes you feel fantastic.
So what are you doing Saturday?
Queering Joe! Why does this keep happening? Just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joe just blows past that obvious come on and says there must be a friend who makes Jane feel comfortable. And there is that guy, Sam, from last season, the future Mr. Josie Bassett. So Jane takes her hot legs straight to the job site where she somehow knows Sam is working and gets catcalled to hell. Not that she minds. She asks Sam to come over the next night for dinner at her place. And he's in. She kisses him on the cheek and the construction guys hoot. And Sam does a Tiger Woods arm pump. And it's kind of cute. Sorry. You can see it in the visual aids because I made a GIF. The next morning, Jane asks Sydney what she's doing that day. Sydney claims she's going to apply for waitress jobs because she's thinking she might stay in L.A. And it's so hard for me to not think of her as Sophie when she's being so Sophie, the character that she played on 90210 at this stage.
Like when Jane is about to hand her a 10 and I'm expecting her to like fold it like Sophie did to do the like 50-10 switch. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, Jane then innocently asks what Sydney might be doing that night. Obviously, Sydney has no plans, so Jane suggests a movie. As Sarah said, gives her cash. Sydney obviously knows Jane's trying to get her out of the apartment because Jane has a date, and Jane confirms that's true and even volunteers that it's with Sam. Sydney judges that Jane is not even divorced yet, and Jane says this, clip 3.
No offense, but I don't need a second opinion on how to live my life.
Also, that's our job, by the way. Yeah. At the hospital, Michael pulls Kimberly, like, barely around a corner to start kissing her, basically totally out in the open, and she lets it happen because his dick is just that good, I guess. At dinner that night, Jane reminds Sam of the time he fell asleep at a jazz festival. Marry this man, I say.
Yeah, seriously. Also, it's Rob Estes. Come on.
Yeah.
That, I mean, he's rocking a really, like, it's a truly horrible dye job.
Yeah.
Still would, for sure.
He then sort of ruins it by saying he saw her face when he woke up and thought, what a beautiful way to wake up, and almost kissed her that night. She almost let him, she says. He takes her hand and she sighs, this is nice. He agrees. He was worried they would spend the whole night talking about Michael and the divorce. But Jane isn't about to waste the night on Michael, and they toast to making good memories. And then they're on the couch, although Jane doesn't exactly have open body language with her arms folded in her lap, but she does kiss Sam. And when he notes that he's happy she kissed him back this time, she stops and says she's not ready to do more, I guess. If they're going to become more than friends, she needs to know it's not because she's trying to use him to get back at Michael. Sam will wait, but makes sure she knows his attraction to her has nothing to do with Michael. The next morning, Jane tells Sydney her date with Sam was great. She can't remember the last time someone really listened to her. She had more fun in one night with Sam than she did all last year with Michael, which I believe it.
Yeah, same. Although, you should have slept with him. Come on.
Honestly. So Sydney puts on a bra top and some jean shorts and heads to the beach 90s-ly to see Michael, who comes to the door after Kimberly closes it in Sydney's face and tells her to call first next time. Sydney says she wanted to skate the bike path, and Michael's like, have at it, bye. But Sydney adds that maybe she shouldn't. She's just so exhausted from last night and spills all about Jane and Sam. So then Michael goes straight to the job site, does not get catcalled, to order Sam away from Jane. Sam refuses to agree if Jane wants to be with him. And Michael then tries to punch Sam, who easily dodges and gets Michael in a headlock, which is pretty funny. You can see in the visual aids.
It was awesome.
He quietly tells Michael to back off since it's tough to do surgery with broken hands, which, again, it's hot.
Yep.
And the next morning, Jane in her very short nightgown answer the door. It is Sam. He's going back to Dallas today, but he had to talk to her first because he thought she wanted to keep Michael out of her life. So why did Michael just get in his face? Obviously, he assumes Jane told Michael about the date to rub his face in it, and she should warn Sam next time. But Jane says she hasn't seen Michael in weeks. Sydney pretends to be asleep, and Jane graciously does not dime her out to Sam, apologizing for getting him into this. Sam's just worried about her, and we'll keep in touch, and they kiss some more. And when he's gone, Sydney gets out of bed and denies having told Michael, but says that after Jane hired a fancy lawyer to go after Michael, who could blame him for hiring someone to spy on Jane? Oh, Sydney, shittiest sister ever.
Yeah, she's terrible. And so obvious.
Very obvious. And in bed at the beach house, Michael can't get it up because he's so stressed out about Jane and Sam. But decides the play is to blame Kimberly for not dressing sexy enough for him. Kimberly is not interested in this line of discussion and accuses Michael of still being in love with Jane, and that's where we leave it for these two lovebirds, question mark. On to the B-plot. Did Jake insurance fraud his shop in Tarot Bang? At the shop, Joe is mildly razzing Jake for having bought a ton of bikes he claims are worth way more than he paid. She's worried that he got them at auction, but he said he paid with a cashier's check and there's plenty of money in the account. And she whines that it was there to pay their quarterly taxes. And he asks how he was supposed to know that. All of the problems that ensue are totally boiled down to the two of these alleged partners having terrible business communication, by the way.
Yep.
He's mad that she keeps him in the dark, which is fair. Joe orders him to give the bikes back, which is not how it works, and is bad news because it means she's going to bounce a check to the IRS. Jake promises to take care of it. At D&D, Joe is happy with the selection of male models on offer, but Amanda still has her heart set on Jake. Joe insists he is not interested in modeling, which in the last episode he was, but I guess she talked him out of it sometime off screen. At the shop that night, Jake works the phones trying to get someone to buy one of the bikes, volunteering to take a loss just as Joe walks in looking worried. Apparently it doesn't work because Jake slams the phone down and this ensues. Clip 4.
We're just going to have to stop payment on the check, that's all.
Stop payment? Well, that's not going to solve anything. We still owe the taxes and the mortgage and these invoices. God, if we don't make this payment, I'm going to lose my whole investment.
You'll lose.
Jake, I didn't mean that.
You're never going to let me forget this, are you? I didn't want your money to begin with.
I'm just concerned.
Well, don't be concerned, all right? And don't tell me how to run my business. This is my shop, and whatever happens, good or bad, I make it happen.
Good, then make it happen. You have a week and a half. Get the money.
There's no one to side with here. Cool. Right. Glad we're, you know, still dragging ass through a finance plot line.
Yeah, it's not interesting.
No. So,
it's about to get at least a little dramatic, though. Jake is working in the shop the next night when Amanda comes by to show him an ad with an amateur model. They paid this guy 10 grand and he never left his porch. She wants to do the same thing for Jake with sagebrush beer. They could even do it in the shop. He's still not sure. It's not him. And Amanda can't find anyone else who looks like they belong in the shop because no one else does. And he agrees to let her pitch him again over one beer. And she goes back to get her purse and knocks over a blowtorch, which Jake has left totally on and which falls onto a greasy rag. So,
great work, everyone.
Uh-huh. So Joe has ridden her bike to the shop to meet Jake for dinner and sees it locked and on fire inside. And obviously she panics because she doesn't know if he's inside and starts pounding on the door and calling his name. She runs around the back and grabs something off a can and throws it through the glass of the back window. So the fire explodes out at her and she screams his name again. See that in GIF form too. As I said, very dramatico. And sometime later, firefighters have got the situation almost under control. Amanda pulls up in her dumb Porsche with Jake, who runs up behind Joe, horrified, and asks what happens. And apparently she's been thinking he was inside the whole time because it was the past and she couldn't text him because she gasps with relief to see him. And Amanda uselessly asks if there's anything she can do, but soon realizes she's in the way and takes off. And Joe yells at Jake about where he was and isn't any happier when she hears the answer. He admits he almost took the money, but it doesn't matter now. Joe sobs that she almost got killed trying to save him and collapses on his shoulder, and Jake is shattered the next day.
And what is with this writing team or this show team and fires in which the guy is absent because he's like sort of emotionally cheating on?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Fine tuning it didn't really work. Maybe just leave that one alone.
I didn't make that connection, but good call.
Yeah.
So the next day, Billy's at the shop helping clean up while the insurance adjuster, whose name is Mr. Harris, inspects it. Looks like a total loss. Joe cheerily adds that they think they'll be able to settle quickly. So that's good, right? But he'll need to look at the books. Joe has them, and Jake is bitter that they're the only thing that survived. And the insurance adjuster leaves. Joe wants to take Jake out for lunch, but he's too upset. Clip 5.
Well, at least I'm consistent, you know? It's just too bad my old man couldn't be here to see me fail. Again.
You didn't fail. It was an accident. The only thing you can do now is move on.
You make a hell of a cheerleader. You know that?
You don't need a cheerleader. You need a reality check. Look, there was a fire. You lost your shop. But now you have choices. And whatever you want to do with that insurance check is up to you.
I told you what I'm going to do with that insurance check. I'm going to give you your money back.
Why? So you can feel sorry for yourself for the rest of your life? Look, Jake, I made an investment. I thought I had a partner who wanted to be in business no matter what.
You don't get it, do you? This is not a setback. This is a total disaster.
So do something about it. Take that check and find a new shop and start over.
Okay. But this time I'm not going to drag anyone down with me. I'm going to do it my way, without a partner.
Oh, boy.
I mean, in his defense, yeah, she is starting in with the, like, buck up little camper shit. Like, in the background, you can hear water from fire hoses still dripping. Like, maybe give it a day?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But on the other hand, his, like, self-pity daddy issue shit is so tired. Like,
seriously. Yeah.
My God.
So over at their place later, it turns out maybe Joe should not have found those books. After all, Clip 6.
You've got a problem.
A problem? What, with the books? I have receipts and invoices.
No. The books are very clear. Your bike shop was in financial trouble, Mr. Hanson.
Tell me about it.
We had one misunderstanding about a tax check, but other than that, it should be just
fine.
Ms.
Reynolds, I understand you're a partner in the business.
I'm an investor, not a partner.
Still, you're a concerned party. Now, we received a preliminary report from the fire department. They're listing the fire as suspicious.
What?
Because of your current financial situation, Mr. Hanson, we are going to conduct an arson investigation.
Well, you think I burned down my own business? I just bought new bikes. I was fixing one up last night.
Well, these books indicate that the purchase of the new bikes was part of the financial problem.
So you're accusing me?
No, he's not blaming you for anything, are you, Mr. Harris?
The purpose of an investigation is to find answers, not to accuse or dismiss anyone of guilt.
I spent thousands of dollars paying for insurance, hoping I would never have to use it. Now all of a sudden I need help, and the people that I paid to protect me, you want out of the deal? What kind of crap is that?
Jake, calm down. No.
Hey, listen, I want to tell you something. I am not the crook here. You guys are the crooks.
Regardless of what you think, Mr. Hanson, our decision will be based on the investigation.
Uh-oh, that's not good.
No, it's not good at all.
No.
Also, like, freaking out and braying at the guy doesn't tend to work, in my experience, but okay.
Right. Also, your shop was in trouble. Tell me about it is not a great response. Like, maybe even if he does get this money, he should not necessarily start his own next shop. Perhaps.
No.
So, much later, Joe and Jake meet up at home. He's in better spirits, but after that conversation with Mr. Harris, Joe is confused. She wants to go to bed, but Jake figures out what she's trying to get at in Clip 7.
You think I torched the place?
I have to go to bed.
So,
I mean, who is like that? You think I torched the place, don't you? 17 ellipsis dots. Gee, look at the time. No? Like, do you want to fuck this person again? Because if you do, you should pretend that you think maybe he didn't do it.
Right. And Jesus. Yeah, you know, if you think that he did and you're okay with it, or you think this was, you know, a smart way to get out of trouble, act like you don't. I mean, you know, there are ways to get around this. Like, yeah, you think I torched the place. I have to go to bed. I don't have time to say a one syllable word. Yes or no is not the way to go.
Yeah, no, that's no. Now you're burning down the relationship, and I don't think you're insured for that either.
On to our A plot. Allison puts the L in alcoholic. Allison wakes up on the couch looking rough, hides the empty vodka bottle in the trash before Billy gets up and then sneaks into bed next to him. And he obliviously rolls over and greets her and apparently starts trying to fuck because she's like, not now, and sits up. She has a big day ahead and goes to shower. He tries to slow her down, but she can't. She's trying to fill Amanda's shoes. Billy has concerns. Clip 8.
Are you sure that you're not burying yourself in your work to get over Keith?
Oh, Billy.
The guy tried to rape you. He committed suicide.
Which means it's over and I can get on with my life.
If you're not ready.
I just called for that clip because it was like the soapiest soap that ever soaked to be like, just a reminder that he tried to assault you and then shot himself in the head. Everybody got that? New viewers? Great. Let's move on. Like, oh, God.
Yeah, she wants to forget it ever happened and makes Billy promise they won't talk about Keith anymore with each other or anyone else. I guess so that we know he's going to go tell Amanda any second now. But in this moment, he agrees. At the office, Joe has come for a casting session and Allison is racing on all the coffee she drank to mitigate her hangover. She then proudly announces that she got the best lighting director in town for the shoot next Friday. Amanda is aghast that Allison booked him for so soon a date when they won't be ready in time, and Allison wilts as she has to admit she locked in studio time too. Disgusted, Amanda says she'll cancel everything. And Allison is then late to the lobby to head out with Amanda to their next meeting because she was on the phone apologizing for her earlier fuck-up. And then Amanda sees she has the folder for the wrong client in her hand, and Allison apologizes for this, and then goes to get the right materials, but Amanda tells her not to because she's no longer going, and an argument ensues in clip 9.
I can do this job.
Really? I haven't been able to rely on you for weeks.
Look, I admit I got off to a rocky start, but give me a chance.
How many more will it take, Allison? I okayed your absences during your personal situation. I covered for you when you couldn't make the deadline on your reports. And then you embarrassed yourself and the company by getting drunk during a client lunch. Today, you booked expensive studio time without approval. Now this.
I'm trying.
But you are making mistakes. You spend your day apologizing and I spend mine doing damage control.
Amanda.
Please. I'm sorry, Allison. Obviously, something is going on with you and it's affecting your work. I have to cut back on your responsibilities.
Yeah. Pastime.
She's right. Like,
yeah.
She has no reason not to think that Allison isn't just drunk. You know, like.
Yeah. Is it just like being a 23-year-old? Like, okay, that doesn't get you a promotion. Have a seat.
Yeah. So the next day, Allison is racing again, this time at home before work, already stressed about the day. And it doesn't help when suddenly Amanda is there at the door with new figures for Allison to rework before the famous family restaurant's meeting. Allison walks out and Billy does this, clip 10.
You can put your whip away. She's off the slave market.
I'm not asking her to do anything I didn't do when I had the job.
Can't you just ease up on her? I mean, she's doing the best she can.
I know. That's what worries me.
Okay.
It's cold in here. There must be some woodwork in the atmosphere.
So, Billy, first of all, don't. Second, don't make a slave market joke about your white blonde girlfriend.
Yeah. Like,
don't do it.
Yeah. Also, then she leaves and he poses. Is this where he poses
with his
like super 90s beltless pleated khakis, dark shirt, like whatever, squirrel nut zippers tie? The 90s were so fucking terrible. We were lucky to survive.
It's true. So as I predicted, Billy has asked Amanda to meet him out at lunch so he can tell her all of Allison's business, Ray Keith. Should Allison have done this? As we have said, yes. Is it appropriate for Billy to do it now? No. Anyway, at the end of the whole saga, he asks Amanda to give Allison the space and time to recover. So the next day, Amanda loiters around Allison's desk until Allison asks if she has changes for her. Amanda says that Allison shouldn't be doing clerical work, and Allison sad sacks that it's all she has left. Amanda says she may have been hasty in her decision. Obviously, Allison was overwhelmed in the new position, and Amanda wants to give her more time to adjust. Maybe start her out more slowly, one client at a time. And Allison is suspicious about this change of heart, but Amanda claims she's just being fair. Clip 11.
I know I might have been rough on you at first and maybe pushed you too much, but I've thought about it, and some things changed.
Like what?
Allison, I am trying to help you. Just focus on famous family restaurants, learn everything you can about it, then you won't think... Just focus, Allison, okay?
Whoops!
Billy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that she deliberately did that to let Allison know why this was happening, but it's still funny.
Yeah, I don't think it was deliberate either, but yeah. And I don't know. Then there's like a 10-minute out shot of Allison eerily fuming, like, oh God, like, why do you make it so hard to root for you?
Yeah. So Allison has just been served a martini at Shooters. I should say another martini at Shooters. When
yes, you should.
Billy shows up looking for her, oblivious to the fact that he's the cause of her mood until she tells him she figured out he told Amanda her business and she feels betrayed that he broke his promise. And instead of engaging with this, he makes an observation. Clip 12.
Look at you. You're sitting in a bar and you're up to your eyeballs in vodka.
Big deal. I just came here to have a drink like everybody else here.
Yeah, well, you're not like everybody else. You drink every night and you drink alone. What, you think I don't notice? You don't think I see the glass in the dish drain and the bottles in the trash?
Now you're a psychologist and Sherlock Holmes.
You know, you think you're in this whole thing by yourself, but you're not. All right, it's killing me to see you like this, and I love you, and I'm trying to help you, but you're just sabotaging yourself. All right? Now, I know you're hurt, and you're angry, and you have every right to be. What Keith did to you is... it's unforgivable. But you gotta fight back. If you don't start pulling yourself together and fight for it, you're gonna lose everything you love.
Just ask this extremely aggravated saxophone and aggressive piano tinkling in the background.
Yeah, I don't know why this like weird bluesy music is the soundtrack at this cool bar
it's
that
totally
they all go to.
Like the strip joint in The Sting. Like, okay.
So... when we see them next, they're taking a walk on the beach. Allison has been afraid to go out the past few months, what with everything. She still doesn't feel free. Keith stole the part of her that felt she could handle anything. What part was that? She's been a suck since we met her, by the way. But he didn't take away her feelings for Billy. They can get back to where they were. But she needs to get herself back on track first, starting with she needs to quit drinking. Billy asks what he can do. He can just be there for her. He's not going anywhere. And then that's where we leave it. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. I'm going to say Amanda, who is actually a good manager with the information available to her and is kind of giving Allison a break for not just straight firing her after all of the times that she has fucked up in the past several episodes.
Yeah, cosign.
Okay. Least valuable player. Allison, bad at having a job.
Joe. Bad at choosing partners and then bad at supporting her romantic partner. Like, dude. Yes or no, get your back into it.
Yeah.
That's your boyfriend. What are you doing?
Yeah. Fair.
It is. Next time on Again With This, Jake blames himself for the fire, Michael blames Jane for the divorce, and we don't know who to blame for Billy getting a Plum Hotel review assignment. But we do know that Mongo mere pawn in Game of Stuff. You'll want to stuff us in a volcano for blighting your eyeballs with our visual aids. Great quote-unquote news. We do them for every other episode of Again With This as well. And you'll find them on our website, againwiththispodcast.com, which is also where you can pre-order our Beverly Hills 90210 book, which is not a bit. It's actually a thing, and it will come out later this year. For more news on that, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 or open up about your estimated tax woes at our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm cheap movie date Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Red Beard, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Eeyore Teeny, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.